You're listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
Everybody, thanks for listening to the Auto D Show here on Dave Pratt Star Worldwide Networks, broadcasting from live above Camelback Road in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm your host, Otto Dagnolo, and tonight my guest is one of the lead singers from a band called Hollywood Gods and Monsters, Chris Aragon, better known as Seven, and she'll be joining me right after this first song from the Fervor Records catalog called Pretty Monster by Reckless Serenade here on the Auto D Show. Check it out.
Carolina, there's no other finer. Paint the room with your watching eyes. Carolina, I've been begging for you. Bite your lip, take me home tonight. Monsters dream of. You've been laughing and you're slain. What do pretty monsters dream of? I don't know. Oh, 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 oh,
listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
And that was Pretty Monster here on by Reckless Serenade here on the Auto D Show, which is brought to you in part by my good friends at Fervor Records and also by the recordingartist.com, where I've been cutting a new record with a different band every week for the last couple years, live online. If you've missed any of those over 80 live recording sessions, don't worry, you can still catch snippets on my reality TV show called The Recording Artist, which is available on Amazon Prime and at therecordingartist.com. If you've got Roku TV, then you can always just download the free channel there as well. And to learn more, go to therecordingartist.com. And now with that, let's get on to the show with my guest, number, I'll call her Seven, I guess, from Hollywood Gods and Monsters, Chris Aragon. How are you doing, Chris?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for coming down. I know I even sent you to the wrong place.
Yeah, it's all good, though. It was like 5 miles down the road.
It's across from this restaurant. Nope, it's not. It's across from a different one. So I apologize for that. I'm glad you made it in. So the name, let's just start there. Hollywood Gods and Monsters. What a name. Where did that come from?
Well, the one that does our smash-ups is Dave Aragon, and he came up with the name. He's really good at that, as he is about many, many things. He's very talented, and he just is able to come up with these really great names, and it was right after COVID that we were thinking about a new project to start working on, and he's always loved that name, and we were talking about smash-up music, and I'm like, we should do it. And he goes, do you have any idea how difficult that would be to put these songs together to you know, do the different tempos and bring all these different songs together into one song? And I'm like, come on, you can do it. And he did.
I think it's funny, as a production person, if someone said to me they wanted to do a mashup, with live thing with the band, I would say the same thing. Do you realize how hard that's going to be?
Yeah, but he did it. And as far as Hollywood Gods and Monsters goes, I think that kind of talks about the good and evil of the world. You know, Hollywood's always the one where, you know, you hear about a lot of things happening, and it's kind of the mecca of the nation. Mm-hmm. And Hollywood Gods and Monsters just speaks about the good, the bad, the ugly, the powerful, the way the world is, pretty much.
And when we talk about mashups, I mean, when I first understood that it was a band doing mashups, I thought, well, it's not a band doing mashups. That's impossible. What is it really? And it really is a band doing mashups, like a DJ putting two records
together. That's exactly what we call it. We call it a live DJ dance band. So years ago, DJ started putting together like two songs, you know, mashing them up together. We took it a step further. Not only are performers doing it live, but we're mixing anywhere from 5 to 10 songs from all different genres of music, pop, funk, metal, rap. We have a rapper. We have a guitarist that sings country. I sing the female parts, and then Diggs sings the male parts. Like, he'll be doing AC/DC. I'll be doing Bananarama, Cruel Summer. Our rapper will be doing Tupac, and our guitarist will be doing Keith Urban, all at the same time in one song. It's
that
a trip.
Is crazy.
It's a trip.
I mean, the amount of work it had to take to plan it, let alone execute the mash.
Yeah, you know.
So you must be playing to some reference tempo or track.
It's called beat mapping. Okay. So basically, when Diggs finds songs that he deems compatible, then you have to take it a step further, and it's called beat mapping, where he has to slow the tempo down and speed the tempo up on the different songs to make them actually mesh together,
right,
into one song. And then once that's done, we're actually working on like 15 to 20 more new songs to add to our set. Then we all go in and re-record. And then after that, we learn our lanes. We stay in our lanes, and it all just comes together.
So you have to memorize kind of the way all of these songs come together and where they transition on top of each other.
Yeah.
That's just crazy. I bet it's a one-of-a-kind show, as far as I understand it. I've never heard of anybody else doing
it. We are the first band in the history of music
It has to be incredible on stage, the response.
It is like a circus, you know? I mean, you've got me up there. I'm like 7 up there dancing, shaking my thing, and we got Rachel, who's an amazing bass player, who's absolutely adorable and sexier in her own right. And then you've got Diggs, you know, he's the Diggity Day from Pimp My Ride, if anybody knows that show with Exhibit. But he's also had 2 record deals, maybe 3. I'm not sure if it was 2 or 3, but he's a great musician in his own right. A lot of people just know him, you know, from Diggity Day being on that show. But he's actually a director, producer. He's had a couple of record deals. He's an absolute genius. And he's the one behind our music, our smash-ups and everything. And then Brian, of course, is on the guitar. He does a lot of our country, sings the country parts. And then Indicut is our rapper. And, you know, he's doing like Nipsey Hussle. He's doing like I said, Tupac. And then our drummer, Bones, who played with Chester Bennington, Linkin Park, Marilyn Manson. So we have quite the group.
Some superstars.
Yeah.
I would imagine that the songs aren't 3 minutes long on stage either. They're 10 minutes long, 15 minutes long sometimes.
No, actually not really.
So some of the mashups are pretty short?
Yeah, they're all pretty short. Yeah,
that's wild.
They're like, you know, 3 minutes.
Okay. And when you said you were talking about putting on another 15 or 20 tunes, is that 15 or 20 mashups?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we definitely want to make a longer set. Right now, our set's averaging, you know, 1.5 to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk a little bit in between. We, you know, describe the smash-ups, but we try to keep it to a minimum. And then, yeah, we need a longer set so we can do more corporate events. We can do more, you know, longer sets. So
primarily right now, what kind of gigs are you guys doing? Corporate events mostly?
No, actually, we're traveling. We've been doing shows throughout bars and some festivals and some venues throughout Texas, throughout Utah. We've done a few. We're getting ready to do more in California. We've got a tour bus, so we're able to travel. And yeah, I mean, we want to get into more corporate events, but you need to have like a 3-hour long set in order to do that.
Okay. And I'm going to have to get Dave on the show at some point. Because
I know.
Talk about a background. And I can imagine the struggle. I can imagine his face when this idea was first thrown up, because it's an incredible thing to even imagine trying to do.
Yeah.
And then to do it ongoing and keep the show going, it's just a ton of work.
It's a ton of work. That guy burns the midnight oil all the time, just with not just that, but other projects that we're working on as well.
And cool.
He's pretty amazing.
What are some of those other projects?
We have a company called Juicy. It's out of Colorado, and it's basically a cocktail in a can where no other beverage company out there has 2.5 shots of vodka in a can. We've got like 5 different flavors, from poppin' cherry to blueberry. We're getting ready in about 6 weeks to release it. We kind of tweaked it. We changed the cans and made some adjustments, and that's about to pop out like literally in about 6 weeks. And he did all of the designing for that. He's the CFO of the company. He designed
like
the cans.
One of those
he
guys
designed
just the, can't stop, huh?
He does all the commercials. He does all the, you know, all of our flyers, all of our advertising for the band, for Juicy. He does it all.
That's cool. That's very, very cool. And when you talk about the band, this is a very organized presentation when you go to that much work with the music. So is it the same with the look? Is it the look always the same on stage every time?
Well, I mean, Diggs is like, you know, he's basically like Tommy Lee rock and roll. You know,
so he has a handful of versions of that kind of for the stage.
I think everybody, you know, everybody likes to change their look up a bit. I'm probably the one that's the most flamboyant with changing my look, and I'm pretty much like glam rock anime.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good description.
Yeah, and I actually had these cute little Japanese girls that were at our show. We played Vamped in Las Vegas, and they're like, "Oh my God, you're so cute! You look like anime!" And I was like, "I love you." They were so adorable, and I was like, "Yeah, that's what I am. I'm anime. I'm pretty much glam rock anime." So they kind of coined me. So if they're out there, listening, I love you.
That's pretty cool. Well, then, how did you get started in this whole thing? Music in general, for that matter.
Me, myself, I started, you know, I didn't grow up singing.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to. I dreamed about it. I did the hairbrush thing, you know, in front of the mirror like most kids do. I loved MTV, loved music. I was raised by my parents, of course, but I'm the sibling of 8.5 years of a brother and 2 sisters. So, you know, my parents were listening to like Jim Reeves and Creedence Clearwater Revival, and then my brother's listening to Pink Floyd and Steve Miller Band, and then my sister's listening to the Bee Gees. And so I just had like this very rounded musical upbringing. And I know most songs by heart. I have this uncanny ability to memorize lyrics. But it wasn't until I was in my early 20s that karaoke, you know, started. Mm-hmm. And that was a big thing. And I started doing karaoke. And then my husband was in a band, and his sister was in a band, and my brother-in-law was in a band. We were living up in Seattle. And I was like, I'm going to start a band. And they were like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to start a band. So I started a band, and it was called Nectar. And we really, like, brought people in, and it went off really, really well. And that was, like, my introduction into music. I was in my 20s.
Wow. So then how did you meet Dave?
So Diggs and I call him Diggs.
Okay.
We actually have known each other for a very, very long time, since we were kids. I moved to L.A. Very, very young. And
from where?
From Albany, Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, no, I was living in Orlando, Florida at the time I made the transit to L.A. I was doing modeling and acting. And I got there, and Brian, who's our guitar player now, and Diggs, who's our you know, the lead singer, the one behind all the smash-ups, he had like this big party group, and I got introduced to that group through Brian. And like everywhere we rolled out, it was like 50 deep. We went to all the major clubs in LA, just got in without waiting in line. And Diggs and I, you know, just became really close friends, as Brian and I did. And, you know, we just kind of grew up together. And that's how we all got together and met.
That's crazy. Now, you say you started your first band, Nectar. Were you playing an instrument or just singing?
Just singing. And I wrote all the music, actually, with my guitar player.
Oh, cool.
So we were an all-original band. Okay. We had Send Me an Angel was one of the covers that we did. Other than that, everything was all written by us, original.
And now with the focus of Hollywood Gods and Monsters, it's kind of difficult to introduce original music into that, isn't it?
That's never been our plan.
Yeah.
We have no plans of doing original music, no plans of trying to get a record deal. If it were to be a record deal, it would have to be something that would be legal, because we are using other people's music to make
you just have to pay the licensing and publishing on it all. So.
Sure.
Be more than, I mean, normally it's, you know, it's 7 cents a song a copy, and you'd have five songs in each song, so it'd be 35 cents a song.
I know.
But I mean, it's something you could do. You could still do. But
well, hey, if anyone's out there interested in signing us and doing that, we're all ears.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting product and a very interesting project.
Yeah.
You were talking, let's see, you mentioned before we went live that not only did you not grow up singing, but you grew up wanting to do something else behind the mic. And you had a great story.
Oh, you remember? Okay. I actually wanted to be a radio DJ. And I would listen to, I grew up in Albany, Georgia. And there was a, my favorite radio station, WALG. And there was a lady on there late at night. And I would call her periodically, more than periodically. I think I bugged the hell out of her. And to play songs, my favorite songs, because I love music so much. And one day she was like, how would you like to come down to the radio station? And I'm like, what? And I asked my dad, and my dad was just like, you know, he was skeptical and everything. So he went to the radio station, and he met her and a couple of the other people that were there working at night. And I ended up getting to sit with her. And I got to talk on the radio a little bit.
Wow, how old were you?
I was like 9.
That had to be a blast.
It was beyond a blast. And I grew up just going, I want to be a radio DJ. Of course, it never happened, but hey, at least I get to be here with you right now.
That's right. But check it out. At 9 years old, you're in a station on the radio.
Yeah.
That had to kind of solidify your interest in being just in the performance side of things.
Oh, you know what? I think I popped out of my mom's womb wanting to be a performer. Yeah. Like, I've always been that ham. Like,
you always put on the little shows. When
you do all the little shows, get the neighborhood kids involved. I'm orchestrating everything. Yeah. It's telling the parents they have to come out and watch us, even if they don't want to.
Sure. Well, what about the look of the band? Did you help everybody with their looks as well? I mean, are you into that design?
I think I may have, you know, guided a little bit, but, you know, our rapper has his own style, and it's pretty dope. Brian, I think everybody just, you know, kind of incorporated their own style, and it works. And Rachel has her own style. Diggs has always had that. He's got that rock star style, you know, and everywhere he goes, he's a spectacle, because he just rocks it, you know.
Right.
He stands out. And as far as me, I just like playing with it and having fun with it. I mean, it's like Halloween, getting ready for stage and trying new things and stuff like that. So
yeah. Do you still feel before a show, would you call it nervous or anxious, or what do you feel?
You know, when I used to do music after I had my band Nectar, I didn't really get nervous when I'm in a band with other people. But if I had to perform like acoustically or something like that, oh yeah, I'm in the bathroom probably throwing up or something.
Really?
I get really nervous, yeah.
So it's safety in numbers, you like all the energy of
exactly.
of the stage and the activity.
Yeah, I don't ever get nervous with Hollywood Gods and Monsters. I just get excited.
Well, it looks like so much fun.
Oh, it's a blast.
Yeah.
I mean, to watch people's faces when they first see us come out.
Right.
And do our first song, they're just kind of like, huh? You know, and they're just kind of like, what the, you know, is this? And then it's like, by the second song, they're just up front and they're just dancing and they're just freaking out. And after we're done on stage, it's like, oh my God, I have no idea what I just witnessed, but that is the coolest freaking thing I've ever seen in my life. And they just become longtime fans.
Yeah.
They're hooked.
Yeah, I get that just in the little snippets I've seen and just the concept. I mean, it's just no one does that. And you don't. It's not just a DJ playing two records and dancing around.
No.
It's seven people up there playing live. But the energy of putting all those songs together.
Six plus incredible. Our sound guy
Six,
is seven.
Okay.
Yeah, because we would not be where we are without HB Abels, our sound guy. What we do is complicated.
Yeah.
And we can't just walk into a bar and just have the regular sound guy, handle all the that goes into this. But HB does it phenomenally. We take him everywhere we go. And he is the seventh member of the band.
So how long has the band been performing?
I'm sorry?
How long has the band been performing now?
We're still a new band. We've only been doing this for a little over a year.
A little over a year?
Yeah.
Wow. So what's the biggest show you've had a chance to do?
The biggest show that we've done is actually, the biggest show that we're going to be doing is actually going to be playing the main stage at Oktoberfest, Tempe Lakes in October. I think it's October 9th.
I'm going to put it in my calendar.
Yeah, it's a Saturday. I think it's October 9th, maybe the 7th.
Okay.
That's going to be our biggest show so far.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, but normally, I mean, I think our biggest shows, we play some festivals, like I said. It's been anywhere from 500 to maybe 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you've all got other lives. Like you guys are launching other companies or other businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So is this something where the band can travel a lot, or do you have to pretty much stay in this area?
No, like I said, we've toured Texas. We're getting ready to do another tour. We have a tour bus.
So everybody can get up and go.
Everybody's pretty dialed in with their work and stuff, where we're able. And a lot of our gigs are on the weekends anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have to leave on a Thursday, we come back on Sunday night or a Monday. It kind of gels with everybody's work schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So far, if we start incorporating in more, weeknights or things like that, and we start growing and blowing up like we hope to do, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah, I hear you. And then get some backup players if you need to that can.
That's very important. Yeah, there's definitely going to have to be subs that we're going to be needing along the way.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough gig to sub.
Yeah,
a lot of guys can go, I can sub. What do you play? Well, we don't play the songs. We play this version of all these songs.
I know. A lot of people are like, I'm going to get up on stage with you, and it's like,
no,
it's
not
that easy to just jump in like it's a regular song because it's not.
No, that's pretty cool. So you mentioned that Diggs does all the promo stuff. So.
Mm-hmm.
How deep have you guys gotten into video for the band so far? Has it mostly been just some live things, or are you going to do some big time?
Well, I want you to go to HollywoodGodsAndMonsters.com, and that's not Hollywood Gods and Monsters. It's the letter N, monsters.com, where you can see some videos already that Diggity's put together.
Cool.
They're everything on our website is high class, like our videos, our the songs that you listen to, it's all orchestrated really well on that website. And there is a couple of videos on there that you can watch that he's already done of us.
Cool. I'm pulling it up on my phone. Oh, there you go. Yep, I see it.
And a sizzle reel. A very good sizzle reel, too. For those that are looking to book us, they can go on there and watch us on the sizzle reel there.
All right, that's Hollywood Gods, letter N.
The letter monsters.com.
Yeah. And there's the website. It's all working cool. Very cool. There's the music videos. Click. Mm-hmm. Too bad you guys can't watch this with me.
Oh, have to get on there. Get on it.
Yeah, get on there now and watch it with me now. We can talk about it.
Get down on it.
So, yeah, how many songs would you say are incorporated in the smashups that you already have going on?
Man, there's some that have 15 songs going.
It's like
one line of the song.
Right,
will
you just
be
throw
in
it in.
Just throw it in there,
Does that mean the song's done? Or do you also maybe use that song in other mashups?
No, that's, yeah. I thought it was spent, but no, because we're actually incorporating... one of the songs that we use in our set now into another song, just the timing of it may be different. Mm-hmm. It sounds totally different, the new mashup, because some of the new stuff that we're doing, a lot of the stuff that we're doing now, there's country, things that lean more on country, lean more on the rap, lean more on just good old butt rock. But the stuff that we're doing now is going to be a lot different. It's going to be a lot more disco incorporated.
Really?
Yeah. So we like to hit all genres for all people. The whole reason why, the whole reason I really wanted to do Hollywood Gods and Monsters personally is because with COVID and everything going on in our world today, everyone's just so, you know, I was wanting something to really bring people together again. And with this, you've got all these different genres of music, and you're bringing all these different people from all these different cultures that love all these different genres of music all together under the same roof to party together and have a good time.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you what it's like for me to see just all the different races of people. You've got country people out there. You've got rock people out there. You've got, you know, rap lovers out there. And they're all rocking and getting down together.
Yeah, because they hear a piece of their thing in it.
It's so beautiful. Like, sometimes I get choked up when I'm on stage and I'm just watching all these different cultures of people together just rocking out and having a great time together. It's moving.
Yeah.
It's really moving.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's fun to meet you and hear you speak about it because we talked on the phone and I could tell in that very first conversation that you're extremely passionate about it.
Very.
And you mentioned about just how important it is and the impact it has. And it's fun watching you light up as you talk about how the people respond.
There's nothing better. Like, when I'm at a concert, I won't watch who's on stage. I will turn around and watch the people watching the people on stage.
Yeah.
Because I just love watching them, whether they're rocking or raising their hands or their eyes are closed. It's just really, it's really moving for me. And when I'm on stage, seeing everyone just laughing and having a good time and just rocking out, it's just like, God, yeah, it's so good. So it's like, you know, I'm just about love and light. And to be able to do this is a huge privilege for me, to be able to do this and to be able to spread that love and light to others.
Yeah, it's an honor. And being able to sing is a real gift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. I started out in bands and playing when I was a kid, and then kind of got into the recording studio, and then satisfied my performance bug vicariously through my clients for 40 years.
Yeah.
And only in the last half a dozen years have I started getting back on stage. And recently, someone approached me about doing a show that features the music of Harry Nilsson.
Mm.
And so they didn't want to sing it. They wanted me to sing it. I'm thinking, okay, I do a John Lennon show, and they're not the same, but I'll give it a try. And I've been working on it. And I have to tell you that When you really push your voice and try different things, that there's something a singer on stage has that nobody else has, and that's that moment when you are singing that thing, and you can tell they feel what you're doing, and there's a connection that happens.
Yeah,
it's not like anything else I've ever felt.
Mm.
And so I think that's a very special thing for singers to have.
You know, it's crazy what I'm doing because I mean, there's a lot of cover bands out there that do different, you know, singers. And with this, I'm doing Mary J. Blige, I'm doing Pink, I'm doing Lady Gaga, you know, and then I'm doing like Bananarama, Cruel Summer. And you have to alter your voice because you want to sound like them.
Yeah.
You want to be able to give them accolades because you're doing them. And so I have to tell you, man, when I had to do like Lady Gaga on Pink, I was shaking in my boots because I was just like, I have a very low registered voice.
Okay.
And, you know, you have to hit some high ranges there. But practice makes perfect.
Yeah.
You keep doing that. You keep practicing over and over again. I was finding I was hitting it no problem.
Right. And you learn to put your voice,
the
sound of your voice in a different space in your mouth or in your throat. It really changes the tone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's been a great learning lesson for me as a singer.
Well, when you guys put these mashups together, are you primarily picking the songs? You're like, I want to do these songs. I want to have this song in there. I want this song. Are you doing that to him?
Nobody's really doing it but Diggs. Now, I have made a couple of, like, I put the Bananarama and with the Keith Urban and that. But usually it's him.
I got to hear that one. That's really cool.
Yeah, I know.
I love the thumb.
I wish you could play one right now.
You know what? This particular browser on this particular laptop will not take your website.
Uh-huh.
It won't open it up. My phone will, and I could plug my phone in here. Maybe we could play it. Do you have your cell phone handy?
I do.
Why don't you pull it up on your site because you'll know what to grab. And we can plug
Let's do it.
Wait a minute. Is that which kind of earpiece do you have on it? Do you have the round one? Is that the headphone jack up here?
Oh.
Cool. You got an old one? Or do you have the other one? No, you're good. Yeah, that's going to work great. Yeah, so we'll plug it in. So you go ahead and find something you want to play.
Dude, I am like technologically...
Today I think everything here is...
challenged.
Well, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to play another song from Fervor Records while you pull something up on that.
All right.
And then we'll come back to it. So this is a song by The Mail Order Bride. It's called Bad, Bad, Bad from Fervor Records here in the Otto D Show. And we'll be right back with my guest, Seven from Hollywood Gods and Monsters.
listening to Auto D, coming at you live.
And that was Bad, Bad, Bad here in the Auto D Show, where you're listening to my guest Seven talking about her band, Hollywood Gods and Monsters. And we're just going to pull up one of their mashups, but we both have phones that have different headphone jacks, so we're not going to be able to play it into the system unexpectedly. But can you play that on your phone? And we'll just hold it up to the microphone.
Oh, my God. I'm probably going to get in so much trouble for this, but okay.
Here's a cut off the website.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle, paper, fight. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. I'll touch you if you touch me. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. I'll touch
everybody
you.
Put your hands in the air.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
Everybody
you.
Put your hands in the air.
It's as easy as a family affair.
Everybody
you.
Put your hands in the air.
Put your right hand out.
Put your right hand out.
Give a firm handshake.
Give a firm handshake.
All set against a little Billy Squire.
Leave your situation, that's the door. So when you step inside, jump on the floor.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I hope everyone out there could hear that okay.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously playing it off of the phone onto the microphone isn't the best way for high fidelity. I apologize for that. But it's a very, very cool little mashup. Gives everybody an idea of what you guys are doing. But I loved hearing that stroke in the background. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. And like I said, if you go on HollywoodGodsAndMonsters.com, there's 5 songs you can listen to that we recorded.
So you mentioned you've got the big show coming up in October. What have you got between now and then?
Well, oh man, you hit me up here. We've got a show on the at the Club 44 in Peoria, and that is going to be on the 28th. Yep, July 28th. We're going to be at Club 44 in Peoria, and then we've got we do have some August dates. I apologize, I was not prepared
for
that.
That's okay.
Those but we have a lot of dates coming up in October as well.
Okay, and are those all on the website too?
Yeah, they're all going to be on the website.
Okay, mm-hmm. And then how active are you in social media?
Oh my God, I'm so horrible. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I try to post stuff on TikTok. Yeah, but I'm so bad at it. I need to get better.
Is everybody in the band on social media separate, or does anybody represent the band's social media accounts?
We do have a Facebook. One of our girls has a Facebook group called For the Love of Hollywood Gods and Monsters. Mm-hmm. And we have a pretty good fan base on there. We do have an Instagram, Hollywood Gods and Monsters Instagram. And we're trying to get the TikTok thing going, you know. But like I said,
it's all so much work.
Yeah, it's so much work. It's like, I just want to hire somebody to do that for us.
Everybody does, you know. It's,
yeah.
It's like every band actually needs a member that's just a social media person, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I go on there and I read everything from our fans. I'm really good about that. Anytime someone joins our you know, our fan page or whatever, I'm always like, welcome, thank you. But as far as like being the initiator and the instigator and, ooh, I'm bad, I suck.
No, I understand that. I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about when you were a kid growing up. You mentioned that you were from Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, you came to California from Georgia, but you were from someplace else.
I grew up in Albany, Georgia. Counted the days till I got my diploma so I could get the fuck out of there.
Right.
I know, I love it. I love going back home to visit. But
but
just,
at the time, you
the time I wanted to get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
So I moved to Orlando, Florida, where I started modeling, doing a little bit of acting, and then... And then, which led me out to Phoenix.
How long were you in Florida?
I was in Florida for, only about a year. And then I did a photo shoot through the canyons going from Phoenix to Vegas with a group. And I just fell in love with Phoenix. And I moved when I was about 18 to Phoenix. And then got a call for a big Saturday morning TV sitcom, and I got flown to LA for that audition. And they told me, because I wasn't SAG, you know, the Actors Union Guild, they're like, you need to move to LA. So I went home and packed up and moved to LA. That's when I met Diggity. That's when I met Brian. Okay.
Now let's back up. You're going through that really fast. So I have a couple questions real quick. No. So when you came out to Phoenix, did you move out here by yourself at 18?
I did.
So you left the family, your brother and sister, and your mom and dad. You said, I'm going to move to Phoenix. Yep. And did you ever find an apartment or something? Did you find somebody to stay with, or what did you do?
Yeah, I got out here, and I actually had a family that was friends of my family.
Okay.
And they kind of took me in and helped me get situated.
And then how long were you here before you got that call to go to LA?
That was, I was here for, let me see. That was about a year and a half.
And how did that come about? From another gig?
No, I actually had a talent agency that I was, and I was bartending, mm-hmm. you know, and cocktailing and stuff like that.
Do you recall where?
It was called Shenanigans. I haven't said that word. It's on Bell Road. That place burnt down, I think, or something.
Gosh, I remember seeing the sign in my face. I can't remember.
It was like, you know, we had to dress like the Hooters girls and stuff.
That's funny.
But yeah, I was there, and I was, you know, it was Phoenix, so of course, you know, there was nothing really going on here as far as. Yeah. But this agency came through one of the casinos for this. And they were auditioning, and basically you had to walk across the stage of this casino and give them what you got, you know, and so I did, and I was one of the three people that got sent to LA for the final audition out of like 400 something people.
Cool.
So I was stoked, and you know, I thought that was my big break. And
so you moved there.
Yeah, I got on NYPD Blue.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I was working out at Fox, and they were all so nice to me, such good people. I know that a lot of them talk about the casting couch, which I did deal with before I just decided to get out of it. And there was so much going on with that. I mean, it was just really gross. But the guys at NYPD Blue, John Isabeau, who I'm still in contact with today, he was a producer. They were so good to me. Like, cool. not creepy at all.
Was it just one episode that you got to be in, or what happened?
I was pretty much kind of like a glorified extra.
Okay, yeah. So you were on a few different times? Or?
I had to go out there like every day.
Okay.
And every day they were filming. They would use me for something. Oh, I played a hooker. I was like getting walked through the precinct, you know, and like I had all these different little roles I would play. It was a lot of fun. And everybody was so great.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Wow. I think there's a lot of people who dream of doing that, of just being an extra, you know, on set.
Yeah.
And getting to do some of that stuff. So did you finally get your side card? Did you get a line and get your side card?
No, I got pregnant. Did you? I did. And I did. I always said, if I ever get pregnant, I'm having the baby. So I did. And I got in medical school, actually. And I took a bow out for a while. And then this is a really funny story. It was very sad at the time, but Perry Bullington from Full Moon Productions, they were a well-known B-movie maker, and he loved me, and he had so much faith in me, and he goes, have the baby, get that ass back in shape, and call me when you're ready to, you know, audition again. They did all the Puppet Master movies.
Okay.
And so I did. I got medical training and everything, and I had my son, who is my baby, and I love him, and I wouldn't change a thing in the whole world. But I went back to Perry and I said, I'm ready. And so he got me this audition, and I went to the audition and I'm like, I got this. Cause man, before I was on fire. I mean, I was crazy. I'd be ad-libbing. And I just went through so much during that pregnancy and, you know, getting in, you know, the medical training, and I just got sidetracked, and all of a sudden I've got this baby to think of. And I get in the room with like these three guys, and I have my script to read, and my hands are shaking and my voice is trembling, and I'm just like, oh, I can't do this. And I was so humiliated, and like, wow. And Perry's standing there, and I'm like, Perry, can I talk to you outside? And he took me outside, and he goes, what happened to you? And I'm like, I just lost it, man. I can't do it anymore. I just lost it. And he goes, okay. And I'm like, I gotta take a break. And it wasn't until years and years and years later that I think I finally got my fire back again, to where I felt okay about doing reads and stuff again and having that fire back. Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty wild.
Yeah. I got so many stories. It would take us God, I got so many stories. And then if you got Diggs on here, he's got so many stories.
Oh, no doubt. But we have you on, and so today's your stories.
Thank
but you. You say you have a bunch of them. What's another story? What's another experience that's crazy?
Okay, so here's another one. Talking about getting on my own at 18. I actually was on, you know, things were a lot different back then than they are today.
Like, yeah.
Kid, I mean, you grew up fast back then. You know, you got basically thrown on top of the station wagon. It was, you know, to travel, and your parents let you stay out till dark. And I was 6 years old and roaming like six blocks away from my house. Like, you just grew up fast back then.
Yeah.
You know, and if you fell down, your parents were like, get the hell back up. What's wrong with you? You know? So, yeah. You know, you just grew up fast. And I was about 15 years old when I moved out. I was already, you know, I had a job, I had a bank account, a checking account, and things were rough. My dad lost everything when I was about 14 years old, and it was rough, and they really couldn't take care of me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was nannying for this lady, and she let me move in with her, and I was, like, off to the races. I was just very independent at a very, very young age. So when I was 18, and I told you I moved to Florida, and I was doing the acting modeling thing. Firehouse, Trickster, and Warrant was on tour. And they played in Daytona. And we all went to the show. And they're like, we're all going back to Finke's, which was a huge beach club bar at the time. So they did. They all went back there. And me and my friends went back there. And I ended up meeting Bill Leverty. He was a guitarist for Firehouse. And he was 10 years older than me, and I started dating him. So here's this 18-year-old girl from Podunk, you know, city, Albany, Georgia, that was watching MTV, you know, with stars in my eyes, mm-hmm. you know, 15, 16 years mm-hmm. old. And now all of a sudden, I'm flying for the first time to Las Vegas for Contraband, and I'm hanging out with Poison and Rat and Firehouse and Warrant, and I'm getting to know them and their families, and it was just a real blow to
surreal.
It was a real blow to the head. You know, one minute you're dreaming about it, and the next minute you're in the middle of it all.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that was one of the coolest things about, you know, growing up from a teenager into a woman mm-hmm. was that I got to experience that, yeah. and it was amazing.
Well, and I think sometimes when you actually have that opportunity to start to hang in the world that you only imagined,
yeah,
then even when that ends, you realize it's real and it's possible.
Yeah.
That you can get there.
Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, and my two sons say this about me. They're like, Mom, nothing ever stops you. Mm-hmm. Like, if you dream it, I know it's cliche to say that, but if you dream it, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a real big believer that if you put out negativity, you're going to get negative.
Yeah.
I believe there's a formula in the universe.
Yeah.
And if you put out negativity, you're going to get back negativity. If you put out positivity, you're going to put out positivity. And if you put out there, I want this and I'm going to have it, I have no doubt in my mind that you're really going to have it, no matter mm-hmm. what it is.
Yeah.
Because I've proven that in my own life.
Yeah, over and over.
Yeah, over and over again. Even with this band.
Yeah.
I wanted this to happen. And I believe that you can manifest things.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Yeah. Tell me about your boys. What are they doing?
So one of my sons works at the airport. And he's like one of those that will be, you know, taking people on their wheelchair to their flights mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And he loves it. And he's also writing a book. I'm also a 2-time children's book author.
Are you? Cool.
Yeah, I've got 2 children's books out.
We didn't even touch on that. So
I know.
What are they called? What are they titled?
So I like to write books to help kids that are going through different difficult situations like divorce or bullying or, you know, just feeling like they're insignificant in the world. And I wrote, my first book was called The Little Flower. And my son is, my oldest son is high functioning autistic. And he came to me and said, you know, I know we talk about heaven and, you know, how great it's going to be when we, you know, leave these avatar suits that we're in. He goes, but sometimes I really just wish I could do it now. And I said, I wanted to go, oh, come on, you know, it's going to be okay. But all I could say was, I know exactly how you feel. Sometimes I feel the same way too.
Yeah.
And it inspired me to write The Little Flower, which is basically this little stem coming up through the ground. And you know, he's getting rained on and the rabbits are jumping on him and he's just pissy about everything. And then all of a sudden he goes to sleep and has this dream where he's around all these beautiful flowers. And I'm not going to give the book away, but it's just a really inspiring book about how, you know, we have a mission here while we're here. and we're not supposed to leave until the mission's done. Mm-hmm. And that's what that whole book's about. And then the second book is Ricky Raccoon and the Bullying Bull, where this little, you know, raccoon, he's got his raccoon dad, his raccoon mom, and his dad gets relocated for his job to another place. He had to leave all of his friends. He had to start all anew at this new school. And lo and behold, there's this bull named Bill who loves to, you know, drive these kids crazy and pick on them, bully them, no pun intended. And so he's bullying Ricky. And the whole book's about, you know, how there's always a dream incorporated in my books where they'll have a dream and all of a sudden they have like an epiphany of how they handle it. And so he just, you know, had a dream that Bill the Bull was at home and his parents were fighting and he had this just really shitty life. And he decided he was going to start being nice to him. And then the rest of the book shows what happened.
That's very, very cool.
Yeah.
Do you have a number of books in the works all the time? Do you have a few you've kind of started that you haven't finished?
Honestly, I called it the Stand By Me series. I was going to write 6 books, and I haven't started my 3rd one yet because the band has been taking up a lot of my time with the band and then the job and everything. I work with chefs and food. And
yeah, tell me about that.
So I handle about 150 to 200 accounts, hotels, resorts, restaurants, retirement facilities for a company called K&M Food Service out of California. And I basically work with these chefs, and they tell me what they're looking for a banquet or for their menu, and I'll give them samples and just walk them and help them. Mainly meats is what mm-hmm. I do. And, you know, find the best meat for what they're looking for their plate.
That's crazy.
I know. I'm a book of many.
It's stuff. Great. Well, it's great to have all of those interests and to have experience in all of those places.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I'm one of those people. If I only did one thing, I'd end up shooting myself.
Right.
You know?
I'm the same. Yeah. I have to be doing all these different things, yeah. And it's like throw the spaghetti up against the wall and see what sticks. You yeah. know.
Well, so, and each one requires a different mindset and a different set of talents and a yeah. different aspect of your personality. And if you only lived on stage, I think for a lot of us, especially in a yeah. dramatic show like yours, mm-hmm. it's also easy to think of yourself as that.
Yes.
And that can permeate your life because it is who you are. When in reality, you're so much more than that, but that's a very, very fun part of what you do.
Yeah, I'm a very creative person and I have to have many outlets.
Yeah.
I'm happy when I've got many outlets and it's hard for me to sit still. I'm always go, 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 like the Energizer Bunny kind of.
How'd you get into this food service situation?
Oh, no, that's another hilarious.
Because you say you work with chefs. I mean, are you a foodie in general?
I am such a foodie. Okay. Like, I can tell anybody in this town, ask me where to go for the best steak, where to go for the best Thai, where to go for the best, you know, sushi. I can be like, where are you at? And I'll tell you the best place to go. But as far as how I got started, I was bartending at Dan Marley's bar.
Okay.
Marley's.
Downtown?
It was actually the one in Glendale.
Okay.
Off 51st and Bell. And it's called something else now. But I was bartending there, and these two old guys would come in from golf. And these two old guys would have scotch and lunch. And I really got to know these dudes. Mm-hmm. And I became close to them, and they were the ones that started the box beef business in the 70s. And IBP, that was when, you know, like, you remember the Brady Bunch?
Yep.
Remember when Alice would go see Sam at the butcher shop?
Right.
And he had like that big carcass hanging there, and she'd be like, cut me off that piece, and he would. Well, they stopped doing that. They started putting the ribeyes in a box, the strips in a box, and so these guys were retired, coming after golf, and they decided to start a new company, a new, like, all red meat company called Midwest Beef Distributors, and they needed a sales rep. And me, I was Chatty Cathy. I knew everybody in the bar. You come in, it was like, cheers. I know your name. I'm like, I know what you eat. I know everything about you. And they're like, we want you to be our sales rep. And I'm like, I don't know the difference between a strip and a ribeye. Right. And they're like, don't worry. We'll teach you everything you need to know. So they bought me these galoshes, and they took me out on feedlots and wow. kill floors and wow. the whole gamut of teaching me everything about beef, about chicken, about everything. And so we started this company, and that's how I got started into it. And that was a long, long time ago. I've been doing it ever since. And I pride myself on being a good product person to go to when you're talking about meats.
That is crazy. Yeah. Who would know that about you when they
Nobody.
See you on stage?
Nobody.
and you wrote these children's
I'm
books.
I'm giving you all my medical background secrets.
It's crazy. It's yeah. absolutely crazy. Well, Chris, we've been going an hour already, so it's running out of time.
It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you and getting to know all this background that your fans probably aren't aware of. Now they're going to be asking you food questions in between songs. And we're going to have to get Diggs up here because that's going to be a fun
Absolutely.
One.
Absolutely. I'm sure the rest of the band would love to come on, too.
We'll bring them all up. Well, thanks again, Seven.
Thank you.
For coming up.
Thank you. It was good talking. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
You got it. And you've been listening to The Otto D. Show, and I will catch you again next week. Take care.